Start with the roll call.
Trustee Anderson. Trustee Buffo.
Here.
Trustee Perry. Trustee Ping.
Yes.
Trustee Robbins. Trustee Stuber.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Perfect. All right, if you'll join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we welcome you to remain standing if you choose while we pray. Lord, we thank you for the opportunity to come here tonight. We thank you for your wisdom raining down in this meeting and on this village. We thank you, Lord, for wise decisions being made and the decisions that will best suit this community, not just today, but decades down the road. We thank you. We thank you for your wisdom to do that. In Jesus' name, amen.
Alright, we'll do that when she gets ready for samples. Alright, public comments. Does anybody want to comment? Not yet? You want to do it after she talks? Or do you want to do it now?
Me or?
Well, you guys. Do you have comments?
Talk at any time.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Well, I do, but not at this point in time.
Okay. Do you, Ms. Clark, do you have comments?
No, I'm good. Thank
sorry you. About not telling you about the Fall Fest.
I'm still waiting for you to call me.
I actually stopped in the other day and you weren't there. For one time that you're not in the library, I actually stopped in. So, nobody else? Okay, well. Do engineering. We don't have engineering report. What you got for public works?
I heard the same comment from Jack. He had no idea about
it. I know.
That,
that was my fault. That was completely my fault. Jack should be happy, though. It'll bring lots of people to downtown.
He was concerned about parking. So, I got a few. And I'll, for the, under number one, I've got two quotes, and that's for the easement for the East Street lift station. And I'll put that in next board packet. But I do want to ask the board if somebody from or as mayor, I'd like to talk to the park district about trying to get an easement from Eastside Park to relocate that sanitary lift station. So,
okay.
But like I said, we've got two quotes for that easement. I was kind of waiting until we got those before I contacted, and I can ask both these companies about Benham Street, you know, a price on that.
Now, we don't want to put it on their property. We just want to go through their property with.
It may be partially on the Park District property.
Okay.
So there may be some remove and replace sidewalk, remove and replace a tree or two. And I do have a plan sheet. So if you want to talk to whoever wants to talk to them, I've got that information. So,
okay.
So this will be coming. Do you want me to ask both these companies to get a quote for the Benham Street easement as well?
What do you guys think?
Or you want me to just go with the low bidder? The low bidder on this was he wasn't the guy that we've kind of been dealing with before that has a better idea of what we're kind of looking for on that project. I don't know which way would be the cheaper way to go. I really don't.
So. Well, ask them both to see how much the easement is, and then we can decide from there, because the other one has a better idea of what we're wanting.
Right.
How much is the difference in the bid?
$800.
Okay. Which, in the overall scheme of things,
is 2028.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I also received, I asked for two quotes for the grain elevator to get power to that. Quotes for this. One was a not to exceed price. The other was a just a this is what it's going to be price. So.
Was that at their choosing or? The way they gave you the bid.
That's kind of just how they felt more comfortable doing it. So if they ran into something else, something.
Someone gave you a time and materials type bid?
Kind of, yeah. Okay. Yeah. But again, it was a not to exceed.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion would go with Miller Electric.
Mm-hmm.
He's cheaper. He had all the everything that we had that we required. I think he's worked with Premier before, so I think it'd be a pretty good fit. I'd like to get this done before we get into the. By the time we get the antenna in, so we know that everything's going to work like it needs to.
That'd be nice.
They put the antenna up. Then we get the power, then we get the whatever data package we're going to get, and then something's not.
Well, so Brian fixes Sprint phones, so we can get that activated now.
Okay.
So Brandy should have a log on for it. I should have a log on for it, too.
Okay. Well, that's the next part. So, but would you like to approve that quote?
Sure.
Make a motion to contractor Brian Miller Electric Incorporated for $775.
Seconded by Vicki. Roll call vote. Terrence?
Yes.
Ms. Buffo?
Yes.
Jared?
Yes.
Perfect. Sprint debacle.
That was a mess.
Tell us more.
That, and we still don't know exactly what the price is going to be. I'm thinking it's going to be $30 a month for the smallest data package they have.
You just
and this is just kind of a generic.
An email on that, didn't you?
That we've got.
I know. It's
the thank you. But that was. So I kind of like to get moving with that as well, so we can get all this stuff kind of lined out.
So what's this for?
That is for the antenna.
The meter reader.
Oh, okay.
Back to the office.
Okay.
And again, there may be something.
They don't think it's going to take that much data at all.
No.
So.
No. That's 10 gig. They're probably talking a gig, but that's about the smallest package they've got. So. And again, we could get into our account to get a better price on that. So now, maybe we get a better price, maybe we get a better idea on how much that's going to be. But if we can lock that down to $30 a month, I think we'd be good. That way we can move forward.
And the reason we couldn't get in our account, it was associated with the old Tolono email address that was being forwarded to the new Tolono email address, essentially. Mm-hmm. We turned off all the forwarders on it and everything, and it still wouldn't go in that email address. Called Sprint, and they couldn't reset it. They had to wipe the entire account out. They said there was no way to reset it because we didn't know what the password was, and we didn't know what the security questions were. And who knows when the last time that account was even updated. And I fought with them all day Friday. I fought with Mediacom because our account was suspended. Our email from Mediacom, which is the original Tolono email address, was suspended. And because we haven't used it 2 years at least. And then So we got that reactivated, and they still.
So are we signing a contract for Sprint at this point?
No. We Brian finally got into the accounts. After I dealt with him all day Friday, he came in, Friday night or Saturday?
Yeah.
And finally got into the accounts. Finally got everything reset. We have, like I said, I have a password log on for it. Brandy has a password log on for it. And we'll write these down in the office, or I guess that's not the proper way to do it with passwords, but we'll figure out something to where we have
a password management system that you can use.
There we go. We'll use the password management system that Brian has set up so we don't end up with this problem again. So it gets passed on. It was a disaster. Fighting with both of them. I think I was on the phone for 4 hours, so. So that's where we're at. To the point where I'm like, well, we'll just switch services.
Well,
because
maybe
I don't
time
like
to look
Sprint
again
anyway.
I was going
to
ask, with the tower being so tall, this should have a direct line of sight to the Verizon tower at the high school.
It's not going to be that. That's the antenna for the radios only. The antenna for the sound link, it might come up 5 feet above that box. That's it.
And he had his Verizon phone and his Sprint phone sitting side by side and had a better signal on his Sprint phone when he was on the grain bins. Which doesn't make sense because, like you said, there's line of sight to that tower. So. So that's why all of our other phones are Sprint, if we stay with them.
Right now, your Sprint is on a 1 gig share between all the lines, from what I was seeing. And if they go over, they don't get charged over, it just slows your account down.
Cool. So, any other questions? What else?
Do you want to set up a plan for $30 a month?
Yeah,
or
I mean,
$30 a month for that?
We have like about a week, so. I'm guessing before they get the electric stuff done, right? Or no?
Yeah, I'm going to try and push them as fast as I can to get that squared away. So.
By Tuesday, if we don't have a better option, we'll go with the Sprint. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So.
But you need to approve that?
It's just adding on another phone line onto our system.
Okay.
It's under. I mean, we can add, if you guys want to vote for it, we
can. I think, yeah, if just adding it on, I don't think we need to vote on it.
But.
Not much we're going to cancel.
Now we can figure out what our best option is for that as well. So, the only other thing I had was we've got to figure out something to do with the secondary meters. In houses, that's the big one that we're going to have issues with. But if we do this, we may as well just clean everything up. About secondary meters.
Thought we never did put that in the thing, did we? Because I thought we were going to.
About that.
We've talked about it, and we never wrote anything up about it. I think. So in the ordinance for meters, if people want a secondary meter, a permanent secondary meter, they have to buy their secondary meter.
That's. It better say it somewhere because we're going to have
a bunch.
Problems.
So, Mark, can we clean up that ordinance? On the we rewrote the ordinance for the meters because we put our the extra money in there to pay for the new meter system. Can we double check that to make sure we didn't put anything in there about secondary meters? Because I know we talked about it, but I'm pretty sure we didn't put anything in the ordinance about it.
So this is the water
rate
ordinance that has stuff about it
in meters and stuff, I believe.
And what part is it that
we want to? A bunch of houses have secondary meters. Some of the newer houses that were built in the last 10, 15 years have secondary meters in the house.
For watering their lawn?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we want to write the ordinance. If they want a second meter, they have to buy the second meter.
Okay.
Is there going to be some kind of penalty if they don't buy the second meter?
They just won't get the.
They've got to cap the line, or how does that?
It won't matter. It's after the.
It's after the first one. Okay.
Yeah.
When is it that I could no longer keep a standard second meter? In other words, what's the drop dead date for you putting in a radio meter for my second meter?
When are you going to do the houses? You guys are moving along.
I ran across one, and I did not install the secondary meter. We've got a newer meter as the secondary meter right now. I'd like to have something by the next meeting so we could get something squared away.
All right, so I'd be writing something that just says, as we're upgrading meters, when the homeowner gets approached by Village and is told that they have to buy a meter, then they've got 90 days to do it, 60 days to do it. How much are they going to shell out? $250?
It all depends, because there's some that are 1-inch meters, so I would say it's probably under $400.
Okay.
But I don't remember the exact price on those, so, I mean, we could...
My question is, do we want them to have to cough that up immediately, or do you want to give them 60 days to get it to us, or something like that, or am I overthinking it?
Or I could just bill it out on 6 months.
Yeah, that's fine. We could bill it out on their bill for 6 months. If they don't want to pay for it, they can pay for it up front, or we'll bill it out for 6 months.
Okay.
That's good. That's perfect.
Yeah, I can do that.
Might not make the office happy, but I think we can actually just add that onto their bill too.
That's pretty much all I have.
Okay.
We have been installing meters. We're probably up to 350 to 400 in the ground now.
Wow.
We should have another 500 coming later this week or the next week.
How are you notifying people that you're changing out their meter?
It's on the water bill.
For
the
specific areas that you're doing, or
nope.
Okay, so the intrusion is very minimal.
Yes.
Okay.
Because everything we're doing right now is outside.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing that they may experience is some water or some air in their lines. So
okay.
Once they flush that out, they're good to go. There is no other disruption to their service whatsoever. So.
Okay. It'd be great to at least be able to notify people that their meter was changed. I don't know if we get some sticky note signs printed that when you change a meter, you go slap it on their door. But the reason I ask is because there are property owners in town that asked me this weekend, Terrence, how do we know when our meter's been replaced? So that's why I'm asking you, how do they know when their meter's been replaced?
They call the office, they can tell them there.
But it'd be easier if they came to their door and said, oh, I got this thing that said my meter was replaced. Then they don't have to call anybody.
That's more cost of something we've got to buy to put on somebody's door then too. So
but which one's more customer friendly?
Kind of feels it's such a minor intrusion. It's,
I know.
They're here, they're gone. I mean, they did mine. My dogs didn't even notice.
Which is unusual for my dogs not to notice.
So,
and the thing is, we make sure meter's not spinning.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not disrupting service in the house.
Mm-hmm.
If it is spinning, we skip that and we go back. So there's nothing. There's nothing that we're disrupting.
Okay. About how long do you think it takes for a normal install?
5 to some we're having issues with, maybe 15 to 20 minutes. So.
Okay.
We got, I think we installed 49 yesterday, so.
It's not bad. Okay.
Anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Go ahead, Justin.
I don't have a whole lot. As far as our numbers from last month, everything was up a little bit. Traffic stops, reports, calls for service. Nothing too serious as far as going on here and going on. No squad cars have broken down.
How are the tires on the trucks?
Very good.
Good.
Other than with a little bit more traction on there, throwing up a little bit more rocks, so it's a little noisy going down the road. But other than that, it rides a lot nicer and feel safe driving it.
Perfect.
But other than that, that's
cool. Any questions for Justin?
Questions about anything that I can answer?
And I sent Justin a quick email. He's got the fall festival covered and all the football games except for one.
There's one home football game. I think it's on the 18th. We don't have anybody scheduled, but I can come out and work a few hours to cover while the game's going on and maybe a little.
It's just kind of nice to have someone on. It gets traffic out of town a little bit quicker and it gets.
We will this Friday. Deputy Franzen will not be at the game. He's asked us, which will be Adrian and Dan, to make a presence like they normally do during the game and then help with traffic at the high school after the game. He didn't think probably 15, 20 minutes will clear out the parking lot. But with
quick.
It being Monticello, he thought they traveled kind of good. There could be a crowd. He didn't think there would be problems. He just thought there might be a decent crowd there and asked for help, so I told him we would help.
Okay, perfect. Appreciate it.
And we will, because that's the
fall festival,
so we will have guys. I don't think there will be any problems there.
No.
Other than them maybe spending too much time eating sandwiches.
Yeah. Lots of food there.
Yeah.
So, cool. Any questions for Chief? All right, thanks, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, moving on quick. All right. Any questions about the bills or anything? Did you guys all have a chance to look at them?
I'll make a motion to pay bills as presented.
Second.
Were there any water credits? I don't remember.
I didn't see any. First you gotta roll call that.
Oh, yeah. So I gotta...
We just go whatever order we need to.
All right. Let's go ahead and roll call the bills. Mr. Stuper?
Yes.
Mr. Buffo? Or Mrs. Buffo, I'm sorry, Mrs. Buffo.
Yes.
And Mr. King.
Yes.
All right, perfect. Sorry about that.
That was hilarious.
Okay, no sewer credits. Regular session minute meeting notes. I don't have the executive session, so. Any corrections on those?
I didn't see any.
Motion. Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Perfect. All right, we'll skip all this. Let's get down to the presentation for the e-cigarettes. Let's get you on. We're not high tech enough to have a clicker, but we'll bring the computer over there and you can push.
No worries.
Push through it.
We teach in the school, so we deal with what we got. So my name is Alex McAlfresh, and I'm a health educator at the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. So we also cover Champaign County as well, which is why I get to be here to speak to all of you. So the reason that I'm here tonight is to talk about e-cigarette-free public spaces and the benefits of having an ordinance for that. And we also collected survey data for the last like year and a half or so, surveying Champaign County residents to get their opinions on e-cigarette-free public spaces and if it's something that they would like to see. So I also want to share that data with you tonight as well. So this is like a blank screen? If I just click, will it just go?
Try it. You might have to click on the presentation.
There you are. You're over there.
Now see if you click.
Perfect. Okay, here we go. So we have a grant from the state of Illinois. So it's the Illinois Tobacco Free Communities Grant. So that's what we're able to do all of our work on. We do a lot of tobacco prevention work. In the last couple years, it has mainly focused on e-cigarettes. Because they have become a very popular product. And one of our main focuses on youth and e-cigarettes. So we work with schools on their tobacco code policies. And then we're also working on getting e-cigarettes to be not used in public spaces to stay in effect with the Clean Air Ordinance. because you cannot smoke combustible tobacco products anywhere in public. So it seems like the next logical step in the public health world to go ahead and include e-cigarettes in those ordinances as well. So just a little bit about e-cigarettes. I know that they have become very popular. I'm sure you're all aware of what they are. But just in case, they're a non-combustible tobacco product. Basically, they use an e-liquid, many of which are flavored, which is why youth are drawn to them. They have all kinds of flavors like Fruity Tooty and mango and creme brulee. There are thousands of different flavors for these products. And basically, that flavor is heated, which creates an aerosol or a vapor. And that is what the emission is that is coming out of the products. Those are just some of the products that are currently on the market. So you can see that there are a lot of different styles. Some, like the third one from the left, kind of looks like a USB flash drive. That would be the Juul, which is extremely popular with youth. I'm sure you've heard of Juuling. But some of them look like traditional cigarettes. Some look like cigars, pipes. So there's a wide range of products out there. So a lot of people are wondering what is actually in the aerosol or what are in these secondhand emissions that are being put into the air. So this is a graphic from the CDC. So some of the things that can be found that they know of, nicotine, different heavy metals, so like nickel, tin, lead, and then the flavoring disetol, which is what is linked to popcorn lung. So those are some of the things that they know so far that are in those emissions. Again, they haven't been on the market long enough to get all of the long-term effects and to get all of what is in there. But these are some of the things that they know for sure are in the aerosol of these products. So are there secondhand smoke or secondhand aerosol risk with these products? In 2016, the Surgeon General said that yes, there are, because again, those chemicals we just saw on the last slide are in these products, which are in the emissions that are being produced from the products. So again, one of our concerns is on youth. So youth being exposed to these emissions is worrisome. And our bottom line as public health is that we want everyone to have clean air when they're in public spaces, such as restaurants, grocery stores, malls. And if these are producing some type of emission, then the air is not as clean as we would like it to be. So again, just to hit on the youth usage, this has been a growing problem for the last couple of years. It was declared an epidemic by the FDA commissioner last year, and it's only continued to have gotten worse since then. It is the most commonly used tobacco product among young people. So for the last like 10 to 15 years, tobacco usage in young people was rapidly declining, but now we're seeing a whole new generation that is possibly going to get hooked on nicotine due to these products. So again, we're wanting to do anything we can as public health to make sure that we're helping to stop that usage from our youth. So for our survey results, we started this survey in August of 2017, and it went through March of 2019 for the results I'm going to show you tonight. So basically, it was just getting community opinions on e-cigarettes in public spaces from Champaign County residents. So we received 676 total responses. Just a disclaimer, we didn't reach the recommended threshold for the data to be statistically sound. We had some trouble in some of the smaller areas. We did meet our threshold in Tolono. We actually exceeded it by 3, which is on your policy brief handout. Those numbers are on there. But I do want you to know that we didn't meet that threshold, but we have enough responses, and this is something that, again, it's a major problem, so we wanted to be able to go ahead and get out there and start to disseminate this information. So the first question was, how often do you use e-cigarettes? Most of our respondents, 597, had never used them. However, there were a handful of respondents who had at some point had used the products. And then one of the questions was, do you agree or disagree with the following statement? E-cigarette vapor or smoke is harmful for your health. 528 respondents either strongly agreed or agreed with that. So the majority of the respondents agreed that the vapor that is being produced is probably not good for you. Do you agree or disagree with the following statement? Vaping should be allowed in public spaces like restaurants and stores. 545 of our respondents strongly disagreed or disagreed with that statement. So again, we're seeing a large amount of our residents in Champaign County that we surveyed are saying that they don't believe that this behavior should be allowed in places where families are having meals or if they're out at the grocery store. So do you agree or disagree with the following statement? There should be a city law that says that there is no vaping allowed in public anywhere that smoking is not allowed. So 513 respondents strongly agreed or agreed with that. So we're seeing that this is something that people are aware of. They would be okay with the fact that vaping wouldn't be allowed in public. So 513. And then we asked, how often are you bothered by vaping in public? Restaurants, stores, bars, malls, etc. And 351 stated that basically at some point they can remember being bothered by vaping in a public space, which is a pretty decent amount of the 676 that 351 of them remembered an experience where they were bothered by vaping in public. So just some comments that we pulled from the comments section of the survey that we thought were kind of interesting. The first one is actually from an e-cigarette user. So this is a person who said that they vape, but they're opposed to vaping in stores and restaurants because they want to respect those around them and that you can still go and vape outside, but they don't think it's respectful to be vaping inside in the public. One person was just talking about uncertainty on the long-term health effects. Not really sure of what that secondhand emission is going to do to others. And they thought it should be treated the same as cigarettes. Another person, public regulation, was saying that they're glad that there's an alternative to tobacco products, but that it needs to be regulated in public. Again, they were worried about like children and pregnant women or anyone who's immunocompromised. And then one person said what we also agree with, to develop a statewide law banning vaping that aligns with the smoking law that is already in place. So just, I kind of touched on this, but the Smoke-Free Illinois Act, which passed in 2008, does not cover electronic cigarettes. So it only covers combustible tobacco products. So e-cigarettes are not regulated at the state level in public spaces. So we work with local businesses. We have been for the last few years. They can put a policy in place that is more stringent than the state law. That's their choice. And the same thing with local government. They can choose to include e-cigarettes in those clean air ordinances. All right, so just some other ordinances that have passed in other Illinois communities. Springfield actually just passed adding e-cigarettes to their clean air ordinance back in the beginning of September. It was approved unanimously by their board members. They did have one amendment to exempt tobacco shops. So they had an amendment where vape shops, tobacco stores, you can still use those products in there. We are working with the city of Champaign to get them to put it in their clean air ordinance. There was a study session in January. They unanimously decided that it's the next logical step to stay up with the times of changing products to include that language in that act. So we're still working on them with them to get that passed. And then the one other one I want to highlight is the state of Illinois. So there is currently a proposal to add this language that we are advocating for to the Smoke-Free Illinois Act. So potentially this could be something that's coming down the pipeline at some point. Not sure how soon or if it will pass, but that legislation is currently out there to add e-cigarettes to Smoke-Free Illinois Act. So we're hoping that we can help some of our local towns in Champaign County get this information, kind of see the results from the survey, and get ahead of that if that does end up coming down from the state level. So this map just shows other cities and counties that have put in electronic cigarette-free public spaces, ordinances, or policies. So you can see there are a lot of places where these ordinances are being put in place. Again, because people are realizing that this is an issue, there are secondhand emissions. They want to make sure that they're protecting their community members. These are just some opinions from around the country that were kind of interesting. The first one is actually a manager at a vape shop in Georgia who said that bans like these will not hurt business because e-cigarette users can vape elsewhere. So we're not telling a person to stop vaping. It's just having them step outside so that they're not vaping those products around the public. In Colorado, the representative of the Restaurant Association and the state's hotels were in support of an e-cigarette-free public spaces bill to protect not only their patrons, but their employees. And then in Peoria, the mayor mentioned that merchants and businesses actually asked them if they could do something to, again, have something to tell their patrons for if someone's in a restaurant and they're a staff member, having a policy to back them to say, you're not allowed to use that product in here, could you please step outside? Okay, so the benefits of having an ordinance in place, these are the three big ones. Of course, clean air, so that Smoke-Free Illinois Act has been in place for 11 years now, so people aren't having to be around secondhand smoke in public. It's important, though, that we stay up with the times and new products, making sure that that Clean Air Act is still effective so that other products aren't being able to be used. It is a plus for businesses because it gives them a uniform policy to follow for their staff members, and that's a lot of what we hear when we do talk to businesses about putting a policy in place, is that if something were to arise, a staff member could go up to the individual and say, you're not allowed to do that, we have this policy either for the business or the city has a policy saying you're not allowed to do that in here, please just step outside, just like you would with a traditional cigarette. And another thing with that is that a lot of those products are hard to tell what someone is vaping because you can't see what the liquid is. So there's THC that could be vaped. There are just the vapes with nicotine. But also some of them look like a traditional cigarette. So it could be potentially hard to tell, is that person smoking a cigarette? Are they vaping? But if both are covered, the policy would cover both products. And then the other big one is, again, going back to youth. So if our young people are seeing people vaping, say in a restaurant, they might associate that with being like a normal behavior. Maybe it's not harmful in their minds because they know that you can't smoke combustible tobacco products in a restaurant. So they understand that those products are harmful. So we don't want to normalize vaping for our youth. So it's another very big benefit. So what can local government do? Again, I mentioned this earlier, you can put a more stringent policy in place, and that language can just mirror the language that we have for the Smoke-Free Illinois Act. Most places that are putting policies in place are using the language from wherever their state has at the state level, and they're just adding the language of electronic nicotine delivery systems. Okay. So if this is something that a village or a city is interested in, there's a lot we can do at Public Health to help out. So we can assist with drafting language, we can assist with implementation, obviously serving as a resource throughout that process. We're also more than happy to speak with businesses, letting them know the benefits, what they would need to do to stay in compliance, because we're already having those conversations with businesses right now, and we have been for the last couple of years. And we also have signage that we would provide to all the businesses to show that they cannot use e-cigarettes. So this is something we would provide as Public Health to all businesses who do not have e-cigarettes allowed in their spaces. So that is all I have. If you have any questions now, I'm happy to answer them. If not, all my contact information is on both of the handouts you just got, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, or if later on you think of something, please feel free to contact me.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like your laptop back, or is
it
okay?
It.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Did you guys want to say something now, or you want us to wait?
I'll wait till you get to the top.
Okay. So what's the discussion approval of the rave systems for other entities use? We have an ordinance that was in the package, but we have some a little add-on to it.
Sure. A couple months ago, I kind of sent you like a preliminary rough policy, and we talked a little bit about it. And then all I added was this community use thing subsequent to that meeting. And part of this came out of the fact that I was at the IML conference, and it picked my brain on some issues that I was kind of concerned about. So part of the system allows us to allow community organizations to send messages to folks that opt in or that are part of their group. The catch is we're using a municipal information distribution system. So we've got information that's kind of coming through the village. And where you get worried about it is if that system gets abused and we've got language or information that we could regulate, namely hate speech or threats or things like that. So the village doesn't want to be in the business of regulating speech at all, but on the flip side, there's some speech that for the public's protection we have to regulate. So I want to have some sort of mechanism in the policy where we can cut someone off if we've got an abuse of the privilege. We also want some kind of mechanism where we're making sure that the organizations that are utilizing the system are tied to the village somehow. In other words, they're legitimate community organizations. So I kind of arbitrarily came up with this. I couldn't find anybody else who's really doing this, so I stole ideas from other kinds of platforms that would work. And I put this in there just so you'd have something to think about and comment on. And then I was also not sure about where we stood on any fees, if any, that we were going to charge.
It's $120 a year and $30.70.
Okay. And then finally, if we did deny someone to be able to use this, or we shut something down because of a speech issue, we need an appeal process. And so that's why that's in there. So I'm sorry, it's $120 a year, and then, I'm sorry, what
$30
was it?
Setup fee.
Okay. So my thought is that you can distill this, and the other trustees can distill it, and we can kind of mark it up and talk about it. You can even do that now if you've got opinions, or if you want to kick it over to another meeting, I'm okay with that too.
I actually really like the way you have it. It's
pretty simple.
Yeah, it's it gets what we want out there, but it doesn't make it complicated.
So I'm going to make this do same time liquor licenses were due, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fiscal year.
Okay, there we go. And that's
May 1.
So we did 120 so we could prorate. So it's going to be May 1. Everybody's bill will be due on May 1 that opts into the service. So
can I opt into the service?
Yeah, you can do
in
June. But that's why we did 120. So we can prorate it. The math is easier.
So. It's true.
It is true. Make it simple.
Yes, the setup fee will still be the $30, but then your fee would be for the remainder of that year.
Okay.
And that way everything comes due at the same time. Everything makes things a little easier.
I also put in something that just said, hey, we can just shut this program down anytime we want, and we'll prorate and give you your money back. So that way, if
perfect.
We did start running into a bunch of odd things, then we could just stop it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions, comments?
Do you want to wait, or can we just vote on and get it done?
Voting it now and moving on with the
program.
Well,
let me write exactly what we're going to do on the fee part, And then you can vote on it.
The golf cart ordinance. It's raising the fee $10 a year to 35, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, comments, it's in here, if you're fine with the language, we can vote on it, for or against. I just need a motion.
Make a motion to approve ordinance 2019-0-12.
Wait a second, let the clerk get back into the clerk mode.
I'm sorry.
I guess double duty thing.
Double duty, yeah.
Sorry, hold on a second, let me go back. I try to pre-write this stuff so that I can jump in and jump out.
Do I have a second?
Do we want to wait till at least there's more than just the three of us?
It's been the board packet for what?
And then we have
this hasn't.
Over a month.
We've talked
the
about
ordinance
it.
Hasn't.
But the ordinance, all it is just the fee. There's nothing else in there besides the fee going up, which is all we've talked about.
That's true. And that we've also talked about the suggestion of why and
mm-hmm.
what the okay. extra money would go toward.
We've discussed it over what? Four meetings?
It's
three meetings?
Been since August at least, I think.
And I don't have the ordinance, so what is that?
2019-0-12.
She rattled it off last time. It's over 100.
That's the only change.
It's like 110 or... I mean, I can't remember exactly. I know it's over 100.
An ordinance amending the Tolono Municipal Code to adjust golf cart permit fees.
How many actual golf carts are there?
Well, that's what we... Brandy was here, she could tell you. She rattled it off at the last meeting. It's over 100.
It's close to 150, I think.
Yeah, it's between probably 115 and 130-ish.
And does the village feel that most of them are registered?
We try.
Do you issue a sticker?
We do. They get a sticker on the back, and it's got the date on it.
But that also...
the street, it just seems like there's...
There's a lot.
I see very few that don't have the sticker on there. So
I've never been that close to one.
The police department has been very good about enforcing that.
And they usually give them a warning or something first, especially if it's right at the beginning of the year when they've expired, and then if they have to talk to them again, they usually take, and the ticket's kind of severe. It's cheaper to renew your golf carts by a lot. Yes, sir.
Do the Fun Day golf carts have a separate sticker?
They have like a little thing that says Fun Day. It goes in the front window.
Okay. All right, so they don't get a sticker. These are officially Tolono.
I think so. Am I saying that right? Look at Justin there, or Matt.
The
you're in the office
are,
for 9 a.m.
Separate. There's the one day.
Okay. Yeah.
Tag.
I just wanted to make sure
yeah,
that we weren't
for like the
inflating
golf,
the number
no,
with
no.
those. Okay.
The golf cart parade gets a little sticker. It goes in your front window. It says Tolono Fun Day and has the date on it. It goes right in your front window. There's only like 35 of those.
Okay.
Ish. Right.
I think the Fun Day one, we even had keep their registration, and that served too for their sticker. But the Fun Day committee carts, those have the Fun Day logo or signs on them too.
I just mean the ones that people
yeah, there's
can rent
special
for the...
permits, yeah.
Okay.
So. All right.
A challenge.
So we have a motion on the floor. Do I have a second? Once, twice. All right.
So there was no second.
There's no second. We have no new information on the tracking software. So I guess we are at the discussion of the marijuana sales in the village. It's your turn.
For me?
Yep, it's okay. All you.
I have purpose since you began discussing this that I'm going to be at every meeting. I'm going to do my very best to do that. And I am currently looking for an answer to my question, what does this cost us as a people? And so, of course, there's a lot of problem determining that because, for example, in traffic accidents, you have somebody that's been smoking pot, but maybe they've also been drinking or doing other drugs as well. And so it becomes really difficult to determine sometimes ultimately what's the cause, where's the cause at, you know. But having said that, all of these things are still a cost that we have to pay as a people for the decisions that our leaders make concerning this issue of Paul. And so that being the case, I want to lead you to a webpage called factcheck.org. This post was August 19, 2016, Unpacking Pot's Impact in Colorado. And I'm not going to read all of it because you don't have that much time, but I am encouraging you to read it because you will be voting on this issue. And I'll tell you up front, I am against opening the door further for pot to be sold in Tolono, Illinois. And my whole reason why I'm against it is because of our families and what it's going to cost our families. Now, they talk about the issue of traffic deaths in here. As a matter of fact, it started out with they were quoting a libertarian presidential candidate, Gary Johnson. He was a former New Mexico governor who supports the federal marijuana legislation. And so Anderson Cooper was asking him some questions. Cooper said, in Colorado, were there increases in marijuana-related hospital visits, or traffic deaths, or school suspension? And Johnson said, actually, overall, not significantly. Well, he was either missing. He was either. He either didn't know what he was talking about, or he wasn't going to talk about the issues that he knew. And so this gives us a readout of some of the issues that came up as a result of marijuana being legalized in Colorado. I'm not going to read all of them. I'll read a few of them. The legalization of marijuana for medicinal purposes happened in 2000 in Colorado. And then I believe it was 2012 that recreational pot then was legalized. And so one of the Rocky Mountain HIDTA state reports said that from 2009 to 2012, 48% was related to traffic deaths. Let me read it exactly as they got it here. The average yearly marijuana-related traffic death increased by 48% compared to the early medical marijuana era between 2006 and 2008. In the first 2 years after the recreational use of marijuana became legal, 2013 to 2014, the average yearly marijuana-related traffic deaths increased another 48%. I was interested in something that was said in the latter part of this. Now again, this is factcheck.org. I kind of like the very first line, factcheck.org is celebrating 15 years of holding politicians accountable. I kind of like that. But at any rate, the very last part talked about related school suspensions. I'll read just a few of these as well. Drug-related suspensions and expulsions increased 40% from school years 2008 to 2009. The vast majority were marijuana violations. This is also significant despite Johnson's claim. However, it isn't clear whether the increase was due solely, and see, this is the problem, whether it's due solely to marijuana because the Colorado Department of Education collects data on drug-related suspensions and expulsions in general, not those particular to marijuana. The Rocky Mountain Report in 2015 said that the Education Department lumps all drug-related suspensions and expulsions together, but it adds, officials reported that most of the drug-related suspensions reported since 2008-2009 academic year have been related to marijuana. To support this claim, the 2015 report cites a website run by Dr. Christian Thurston, who's an expert on youth substance abuse in the University of Colorado. A post on drthurston.com said that officials with the Colorado Department of Education say that the state schools are reporting a sharp rise in marijuana-related troubles for students. Now, I'm not going to read all of this, but as I find little interesting tidbits, you can expect that I'm going to read some of them to you until a decision is made. Again, that's factcheck.org, and the title of this report is Unpacking Pot's Impact in Colorado. And if you want me to, I can send a link to Terrence, and he can get them to you as well if you'd like for me to do that. That's all I wanted to say to you tonight.
Thanks. All right. Get everything done?
I'm ready.
Perfect.
Okay, so you have in front of you an ordinance approving rave alert policy and procedure. And you flip into the last page where you've got the three blank lines, where it says, shall be as follows. I'm proposing that you strike the language as follows, so that it reads, shall be comprised of a setup fee of $30 with an annual fee of $120 per year for each fiscal year, with any partial year application to be prorated.
All right, I need a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second that.
Right.
The rave alerts.
It's right in the minutes.
So let's see if I can do this better this time. Terrence?
Yes.
Jared?
Yes.
And Vicky.
Mr. Buffo?
Yes. And Vicky. Yeah. I didn't even go that route this time. Make it easier.
I've done worse.
All right, so is there any, I think that's everything. Anything to add to the nuisance stuff? No. I guess we haven't heard any word from lawyers and stuff.
There's
like
nothing
that.
New to report.
Okay, perfect.
But things are in progress.
Awesome. I didn't see any special events that we have to approve. Nothing for executive session, anything for the good of the order. Any motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Why'd you look over at me?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Perfect. Thank you all for attending.